A lot has been said about money down through the years, and we're going to talk about money this morning. And so I thought I would start off this morning by having some quotes from the different people that talk about money. I like the quote from Will Rogers that says, "The quickest way to double your money," oh, you can't say that very well, can you? "The quickest way to double your money is to fold it in half and put it in your back pocket. You can double your money." Another comes from the comedian Joan Rivers, who once said, "People say that money is not the key to happiness, but I always figured that if I had enough, I could buy a key or had a key made." And finally, a quote from the famous P.T. Barnum. He says, "Money is a terrible master, but an excellent servant." So kind of things about money, that these quotes and many like them inform us that money should not be important to us, but oftentimes it is, isn't it? Money should not be to us something that we covet or want, but the way we treat money has been a source of conflicts and situations that have been bad for years and years to go. The lust of money and the need for money seems to grow almost as fast as it shrinks in our pockets, right? We want more. We want more. Some is never enough. No matter how much money you acquire, it never seems to satisfy us. This should come to no surprise to you that the Bible talks a lot about money. 13 of Jesus' 39 parables talks about money, a full third of them. And those are just the parables. He has other teachings in the Gospels that deal with how we are to treat our money and use our money. The famous Sermon on the Mount has the verses that says, "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust will destroy, where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven," right? "Where moth and rust do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there what? Your heart is also," right? And of course, just a few verses later, he says, "But seek first the kingdom of God," and then all these things, all these material things, all these possessions, all this money, all these things will be added to you, right? Will be given to you as well. Jesus knew how you view money is as vital to your walk with him as anything else. Because often money can crowd out our loyalty and can become a master over us. I saw another quote online this last week as I was looking at money in our Christian walk, and it said this. It said, "Stewardship isn't just an aspect of our Christian life. It is the whole of the Christian life. How we treat our money, how we look at money, how we deal with money is not just a part of our Christian walk. It is all our Christian walk." I tend to agree, because how we handle our gifts and finances that God gives us tells us a lot about who we are in Christ. If you are generous and giving of your money and your wealth, often that's a good indicator of who you are as a giving in person and giving God everything else in your life. If you're stingy or tight-fisted with your money, it shows that kind of a heart behind that. Well, we've been looking at 1 Timothy as of late, this book of 1 and 2 Timothy, and Paul's been showing Timothy different aspects of his life that display God's faithfulness and how he too in turn can be faithful. And so far we've seen that we can be faithful by teaching sound doctrine, in prayer. We can be faithful in good godliness and ministering to others. All these things we looked at so far, and some of these we're actually going to look at again today, because today we're going to look at an aspect where Timothy brings all these things together. Because at the last chapter of 1 Timothy, we'll see that Paul is kind of wrapping up the things here that he wants to talk to Timothy about and kind of adding to some of these last few things, some words of encouragement, as well as showing Timothy a couple other areas, a couple other things that Timothy can be faithful in doing. And Paul kind of intermingles these two at the end here, this last chapter. And so we're going to talk about one this week and one the next week. But like I said, they're kind of intermingled there in 1 Timothy chapter 6. But I like how Paul kind of intertwines some of these first four things that we talked about so far in with this final chapter, and especially around our finances, because we can also be faithful financially as well. Just like Jesus, Paul knows that if you're faithful in how you treat and view your money, it'll impact your faithfulness in your other areas of your Christian walk. And we can be godly in our finances in three different areas. We can first of all be financially, treat our finances with a godly contentment. Now this starts in verse 6 of chapter 6 of chapter 6 of 1 Timothy. So let's start reading there in 1 Timothy chapter 6, starting in verse 6. It says, But godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into the world and can take nothing out of it. But if we have food and clothing, we will be content with that. People who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge men into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. Some people, eager for money, have wandered from the faith and have pierced themselves with many griefs. Contentment is a good word. It's a great word. Contentment is that inner sufficiency that keeps us peaceful when all else around us seems to be in turmoil. The inner sufficiency that keeps us at peace in spite of the outward circumstances is how Wiersbe tells us. It's an attitude that whatever we have, whether it be little or a lot, is enough. And this is so hard in our human nature because we always seem to want more, right? We want something and we try to do our best to do and get that, and then once we get it, we find out, hey, that's not going to satisfy me, or that's not enough. I want more. We never seem to reach that point where we are satisfied with what we have. A good example of this is this last week, Apple came out with a new iPhone, right? It's the Apple. We got to have the Apple 5 phone, and it's just been flying off the shelves because it's the latest and greatest thing, right? You got to have it. We're not satisfied with our iPhone 14. We have to have the iPhone 15 now, right? Even though that's probably not too different from the iPhone 13, and our iPhone 14 is just the same as... We want the newest and greatest thing, right? We want more. We're not content with what we have. But contentment is an attitude that we need to learn. And it's a lesson that Paul learned as well, because it's in his letter to the Philippian church, he says this. He says, I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I've learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. And I always like this verse because for the longest time I thought, Paul, you learned the secret of being content. Tell us, what is the secret of being content? Because it says, I've learned the secret, so tell us. And it took me the longest time to think, I probably should read the next verse. Because sometimes I didn't include the next verse with this verse here in verse 12. But verse 13 comes right after verse 12, and it says, I can do everything through him who gives me strength. Well, how is that contentment? How is that being content? It's knowing that God has you in his hands. That no matter what, God is with you. The reason why Paul was able to learn the secret of contentment is because he knew that he had a God who could supply all his needs. He didn't need to worry when he was lacking if God would supply his needs, because he trusted in God that God would give him strength. He didn't have to worry when he had much, because God was still supplying and giving him strength. God gave him the power to go on living, whether he is rich or poor, whether he had abundance or was in need. You see, contentment is not the size of our bank account. It's not the size of our bank account. It's the size of our God. That's what contentment is. It's not the size of our bank account. It's the size of our God. I love what Warren Wiersbe says. He says, true contentment comes from godliness in the heart, not wealth in the hand. You know, that's what contentment is. It's saying, hey, God, I'm blessed with you. You see, a person who depends on material things for peace and assurance will never be satisfied. If you're looking for money, for power, for things on this earth to supply your needs, to satisfy you, you're not going to find it. See, contentment is not based upon who holds you, not what you hold, but who holds you. Contentment is not based upon who is based upon who holds you, not how much you hold. I love the passage from Psalms 131, verse 2. It's a great verse. I love it. It says, I have kept my feet on the ground. I have cultivated a quiet heart. Like a baby content in his mother's arms, my soul is a baby content. I love that. Can you picture that? How content a baby is in his mother's arms. That's what contentment is. It's not based upon how much that baby owns. It's about who is holding that baby. Who is holding you? Is God holding you? Are you depending upon Him? Because that's what we need. Those trusting arms of God and resting in Him for all we need. Because like a loving mother, He cares for His children. This goes back to what we learned a couple weeks ago, how we are to treat God as our Father and others as our brothers and sisters in Christ. You see, as a loving God, He provides for us. We should not fret about money or possessions, not because we don't have them or because we do, but because who holds us. I like what Timothy says next, or Paul says to Timothy next, because it says we bring nothing into this world, we take nothing from it, so what good is money? The things of this world that we want are just temporary things. They are worthless in the grand scheme of things. The cash in our pocket, it's just paper. It's paper. Now, it's worth something, but it's paper. Coins in our pocket are just bits of metal. You know, even if we had gold and precious stones in our pocket, what are they? Rocks. Right? Gold is just rocks. We're going to walk on it one of these days up in heaven. It's going to be part of the asphalt. It's worthless in the grand scheme of things. And if our whole life is geared to getting things, we'll end up in a trap and a destruction. I found another psalm. It's a great psalm as well. Psalm 49, starting in verse 13, it says this. It says, "This is the fate of all those who trust in themselves and of their followers who approve of their sayings. They are like sheep destined for the grave, and death will feed upon them. The upright will rule over them in the morning. Their forms will decay in the grave, far from their princely mansions. But God will redeem my life from the grave. He will surely take me to Himself. Do not be overawed when a man grows rich, when splendor of his house increases, for he will take nothing with him when he dies. His splendor will not descend with him." I love that. It's not going to go with him to the grave. You see, we live in a temporary world. And so why are we striving so much on the temporary splendors of this world? Things that don't last, things that we can't take with us. You see, Paul says if we have enough to eat, to drink, that should be content with us. That should be enough. We need to express our love to God, not to money. You see, the love of money is the root of all. What does that verse say? Many times this verse has been misquoted. So I wanted to put it up on the screen here. It's not money is the root of all evil. It's not that money is evil. What does it say there? Money is, it's not even the money is the root of all evil. Notice what it says up there. It's a root. Now there are some translations that say the, so I'll give you a little bit on there. But it's a root. There's no, actually in the Greek, there's no definite participle pronoun there. There's no definite article there that makes this the root. It's a root. It's a way of a folly. It's a way of falling. It's just one way that'll lead us astray. How we treat money determines if it leads to evil things or not. And often, too often, it does lead to a variety of sins. It leads to pride. It leads to greed. It leads to sloth. It leads to envy, discontentedness, faithlessness, lack of dependence upon God. And I could list many, many more sins in the Bible that deal with money. Paul says, at best, it says it best here when he says, some people, I would say many people, eager for money have wandered from the faith and have pierced themselves with many griefs. They've wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. I like that phrase there, pierced themselves with many griefs. It's actually the idea of poking someone, some yourself, or stabbing yourself full of holes. Kind of the modern equivalent is shooting yourself in the foot, right? That's what we do when we look out for money. Only shooting yourself in the foot is what? Accidental, right? You accidentally shoot yourself in the foot. But when you treat money as your sole supply, it's shooting yourself intentionally in the foot. It's saying, oh, I want money more than God. Boom! That's how stupid it is to trust in money. It's shooting yourself. It's poking yourself full of holes. It's going to do you no good. It's going to do you harm more than good. So while we often think of this as something accidental, money should be treated with contentment and think we need to have godly contentment. We need to trust in the steadfast arms of God. accept with humility the gifts that he does give us and the money that he does provide for us, but forget about chasing after money or trying to seek it or trying to depend upon it. Because when we do, we're only hurting ourselves. We're intentionally shooting ourselves in the foot. So not only should we treat our finances with godly contentment, but also with godly hope. You see, Paul does not stop talking about money in verse 10. Later on in this chapter, Paul comes back to this subject. And in verse 17, he says this to Timothy. He says, "Commend those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant, nor put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment." I love this. Godly hope. You see, godly hope is a certain hope, whereas hope in money is very uncertain, he says here. Now, I could talk a lot about hope in this passage because that's the idea, and I have talked about hope when I did those series of hope. But I don't need to preach about preaching the hope for those that are trusting in riches because this is a command to those who are rich. And so you guys are not rich, and so therefore I can just skip over this verse, right? We're not rich. We're poor, so we don't have to listen to this command, right? We don't have to worry about our arrogance or putting our hope in money and wealth, which is uncertain, right? Command the rich. Well, being rich this verse has nothing to do with poor people, but who is poor? Who is wealthy? Who is rich, right? I don't think Paul's just telling say, I think Paul's kind of using hyperbole here, kind of using exaggeration, saying, hey, those rich people need to really watch out, whereas the poor people don't need to worry about that. Poor people need to worry about just as much as rich people, right? They too can be arrogant. They too can put their hope in the little wealth they might have, right? So I think Paul is saying this with kind of a tongue stuck firmly in his cheek. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The rich need to worry about this. No, everyone. Everyone, I think, needs to worry about this. But who is rich in this present world? And maybe a better question would be, who isn't rich in this world? See, being rich is not the amount in our bank account or in the size of our paycheck. Being rich is an attitude toward money, right? Besides, here in America, I would consider a lot of us rich. Here's a few facts here that I looked up here on the line this last week. The average income of those living in the United States is $54,400 a year. Okay, that's the average income. Some make more, some make less. Some people are retired and they don't make that. Some are, anyways. That's kind of average income of the United States. That might be more than you think or might be less, but that's kind of the average. And that might seem a lot to many of us. But let me give you this fact. The average annual income for the rest of the world, $9,700. $54,000 for Americans, $9,700 for the rest of the world. And I think that actually includes the stats for the United States as well, kind of averaged in there, because I don't think I got just for the rest of the world. I think I got for the whole world. That's the average income annually for the rest of the world, right? Big difference. A lot of people here in the United States would be considered very rich compared to those living in other places of the world. In fact, five times as rich, right? I find that shocking because to put that in our hourly form, if we put that, how much does that make per hour? If we work a 40-hour week, that means you're getting $4.85 an hour if you work a 40-hour work week for a whole year. And I think that's with 2 weeks off of vacation, too. But anyways, less than $5. Of course, the annual minimum wage here in the United States is $7 and some odd cents now, and they're wanting to get it up to 15 from what I hear, different politicians. But making $5 an hour for the rest of the world is average. To here in the United States, that's less than average. That's poor. So here in America, we are rich. Very rich. Here's another statistic I found, okay? Who is rich? If you have $4,210 to your name, you are richer than half of the people around the globe, according to a 2018 survey. $4,200. Again, that might not seem a whole lot. That's including your whole net worth, including your houses, your cars, your I mean, we have houses that we own that are worth much more than this. Cars, which are, well, my car is not worth that much. But anyway, we have cars that are worth much more than this. And some of us, many of us, have a separate house that we don't even live in, right? We actually park our car in there, right? We're rich. Most of us have much more than that to our name. And yet, half of the people in the world have less than that. Now, again, I'm going to preface this by saying, well, other areas of the country have costs of living that are less than ours, and so therefore living in America costs more. But that, take that with a grain of salt. But if I would ask most of you out there, who do you think are the rich people, or what do you consider rich in this present world? Or do you consider yourself rich in this world? Most of us would say no. We don't consider ourselves rich, right? I don't consider myself rich. But if I look at the numbers like this, then yeah, compared to others, I have a lot of money. And the idea about who is rich is a sliding scale. What do I mean by that? Well, there was a recent survey, actually back in June, by Schwab, who asked Americans, how much money do you need to have to be rich? How much money do you have to be rich? And the average people said, and the average is all about, $2.2 million are those that be considered rich. You need $2 million to be considered rich. Most of us don't have that. But if you break those numbers down, those who earn less have a lower lower standard for considering who is rich. I mean, if you earn less than $30,000 a year, most said that you'd be considered rich if you earned $74,000, about twice as much as the $30,000 people. You're not rich making $30,000, but you are rich if you made $74,000, right? But if you ask those who made $74,000, do you consider yourself rich? No. Who do they consider rich? $125,000 rich. You know, $125,000 or $150,000 would be rich in their eyes to those who make $74,000. But if you ask those who make $125,000 or $150,000 a year, that's, again, most of us would consider that rich. They would say, oh, I'm not rich. You need to make $500,000 to be rich. Again, it goes on and on. The more money you have, the less you think you're rich. So when Paul says, command those who are rich, who's he talking to? It's to us, folks. It's to us. You see, money is in the eye of the beholder. No one is rich in their own eyes. Only those who have more than us are rich. And when we get more, we consider that we need more in order to be rich, right? This is why putting your hope on current wealth is so uncertain. It's never enough. It's temporary. It's so fleeting. Instead, Paul says, put your hope in God because God never changes. God never changes. God's always there for you, always firm, always enough, always sufficient. He's reliable, faithful, true, sure, and grounded. Never to change, whereas our money will. He'll always be there for us. And so when Paul says, command those who are rich, have no doubt he's speaking to every one of us. It's not our wealth that we should count upon. It's our wealth in Jesus, our hope in God. When we have that godly hope, we can rely upon anything. We can go through anything. We can be rich. We can be poor. Because we know God has us and holding us in his arms. See, it's not our wealth that we should count upon, but this godly hope that will last through thick and thin and will always be there for us. But then Paul finishes by saying that we should not have godly contentment, godly hope, but also a godly foundation. He talks about how finances, by reminding his readers about the firm foundation that we have in God. And this brings back the ideas of sound doctrine that we looked at in chapter 1. It talks about the godliness that we looked at in chapter 4. And even about kind of ministering to others, as we saw last week in chapter 5. But here in chapter 6, he says this in verses 18 and 19. He says, command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds, and be generous and willing to share. In this way, they will lay up a treasure for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming age, so that they may take hold of the life that is truly life. I like these verses because God says, Paul says, hey, we need to rely upon our good works, our good deeds, to be generous, to share with others. And this is where we get our firm foundation at. This goes all the way back to what I started the sermon off with the Sermon on the Mount. Where our treasure is, there's where our heart is. If we put our treasures in heaven, that will build a firm foundation. If we have a sound doctrine and godly lives and prayer and ministering to others and giving to others, this will be true life. You see, money will not save us. It will even hinder us from having a spiritual-filled life many times. In fact, Jesus says this, talking to a rich man, he says, how hard it is for a rich to enter the kingdom of God. Indeed, it is easier for a camel to go through an eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of God. Why? Because what are they trusting in? They're trusting in themselves and their money, things that they own, instead of in God who saved them. Too often those who are rich put their trust in the unstable foundation of money instead of the sure foundation of Jesus. They put their trust in money that won't last. Instead, Paul says, look to your good deeds. Now, will your rich deeds save you? No. I'll say that just as clearly as money won't save you. But they are a result, a necessary byproduct of a life lived through Jesus Christ and faith in him. It goes back to Jesus' teaching that you are to store for yourselves treasures in heaven. You may never be rich here on earth, but all of us can be wealthy in the world to come, though. It only comes from how we treat and use the money and our gifts here on earth. That's kind of the basis, kind of the way we can see how our lives will be in the life to come. See, oftentimes we think we need to have a lot of material goods to give us a fun and true and happy life. Full and enjoyable life means lots of money, lots of possessions. But Paul is saying here just the opposite. He says in order to save a life and have a good life, a really true and true life, we need to focus on more than what we can. We need to focus more on what we can give to build a solid and firm foundation. That will bring us enjoyment in life, both now and in the future. You see, you can live your life to the fullest here on earth and live it up with all the things that you have, with your wealth and your money. But when your day comes, you might not have a leg to stand upon when you reach heaven. This is what Jesus talks about when he talks about the rich man and Lazarus in that parable. The poor man who relied upon his good deeds here on earth was given a place of comfort with Abraham's bosom, while the rich man who considered his comfort here on earth was left in torment in the next life. You see, we too need to focus more on the life to come and on the foundation that we can build up in heaven. You see, Jesus says, I've come that they might have life, and life to the full. That means because of money. Money won't give us that full life. It's only through Jesus. I have come. That's in the context of being the gate into the heaven. I am the gate, and all who come through me will enter in. I want them to have a full life. And a full life here on earth, but based on what we do in heaven as well. You see, the rich life. The New Living Translation says, I came to give them a rich and satisfying life. Which, same translation here, but to the full. I've come to give them a rich and satisfying life. Jesus is not talking about money. Yes, that may come. God may bless us with money. But again, money is not a bad thing. It's when it becomes our master, when we trust in it, instead of the foundation that we lay in heaven, where it becomes that root of all evil. I like what Warren Wiersbe also says. He says, a believer can be rich in this world and also rich in the next if he uses what he has to honor God. He goes on to say that a person can be poor in this world but also use his limited means to glorify God. I would also add that you can be poor in this world and also poor in the foundations of God as well, because if you're poor and have that kind of stingy attitude, that's not laying a foundation in heaven. Remember the parable of the talents. It was the poorest person, the one who was given just the one talent, who kept it for himself and held on to it and then invested, that was deemed unworthy by his master. It was a person who was condemned because he did not use what little he had to honor his master. And so if we're faithful in what God has given to us, whether rich or poor, little or much, God will bless us by honoring him. If we're faithful in using all the monies and the possessions that God has given to us for his honor and glory, that will be the foundation to have that great, enjoyable, happy life. You see, the life Jesus came to give us is a life of peace and contentment and knowing that we possess already the greatest treasure that anyone could ever have, a relationship with God and his hope for eternal life. So rich or poor, in need or well supplied, how are you using what God has given to you for his kingdom here on earth? Are you building a foundation of wealth in the life to come? Are you being rich in good deeds and by doing his will on earth? Are you generous and willing to share your treasures and abilities? If so, that's that foundation of the treasures in heaven. You might not have a whole lot on earth, but you can be rich in God's eyes. And he has called us all to build this heavenly foundation of godliness. Now, one of my favorite verses about money and wealth in the Bible is from Habakkuk. Now, you might think, Habakkuk? What does Habakkuk have to say about money? And it relates actually to what Paul says here in Timothy. But the message in Habakkuk is actually a conversation that Habakkuk had, if you read the book of Habakkuk, between Habakkuk and God. And Habakkuk's mourning and lamenting, hey, look at all the evils that is around us in the world. What are you doing about this evil on earth? And God actually answers back. It's kind of a diary type of thing where God answers back, and God tells Habakkuk, I'm going to bring these guys, and I'm going to destroy all the evil guys. These Babylonians are going to come and destroy everyone. And Habakkuk says, the Babylonians, they're more evil than the Israelites. Why are you taking out the evil people with more evil people? It's kind of the conversation that he has there in Habakkuk. And God says, well, you're right. The Babylonians are wicked, but I will deal with them in the end as well. In fact, he says there at the end of chapter 2 that the Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth be silent before him. That's kind of God's answer to Habakkuk. Okay, let God handle it, okay? God's going to handle it. So what does this have to do with finances? Well, the last chapter, Habakkuk prays, okay, God, I understand what you're saying. And he ends his book with these verses. It's kind of a prayer resolution to let God be God, okay? He says this, even though the fig trees have no blossoms and there are no grapes on the vines, even though the olive crop fails and the fields lie empty and barren, even though the flocks die in the fields and the cattle barns are empty, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will be joyful in the God of my salvation. The sovereign Lord is my strength. He makes me as sure-footed, that foundation, as a deer able to tread upon the heights. Right? Even though we might be the poorest of poor, things are not going our way, things are bad, the fig trees are gone, the cattle are out of the stall, we don't have anything in our lives to trust upon. We can trust upon the sure-footedness and the foundation of God. God is in his holy temple. Let all the earth be silent before him. You see, even if we're poor and not rich, even though we have nothing to hold upon here on earth, even though we're in desperate circumstances, we can rejoice in the strength and power that God gives us. Even when we're poor, we are rich. 2 Corinthians 8:9. As Christians, we need to use our finances and be faithful. To be faithful with what God has given to us, to have these things as godly contentment, godly hope, and a godly foundation. I hope that each one of us are prayerfully considering how we treat the money that God has given to us, rich or poor. Are you the ones who only content if you have more? Are you kind of the ones that my bank account's not enough, I need to get more. I need to do something to get more. Are you ones that put your hope on something that's so uncertain, so fickle, so temporary? It's paper, metal, and stones. Or are you one that's building a foundation in heaven where money can't buy here on earth. You cannot buy with money the things that God has for us in heaven. And so in conclusion, I'm going to ask the ushers to come forward. And no, I'm not going to do that this morning. Now that I've talked about money, you can pray and ask what God has enforced for you for that. See if you're trusting in those things, or if you're willing to say, hey, God, I'm going to use what you've given to me for your honor and glory.